This is K2I Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area right here in central Iowa. Thanks for listening, and myself, Paul Wearson, and Susan Franson will be your hosts for today. Now, it's a good day to welcome Leanne Harder with the monthly Story County Report. There's always a lot of focus on local government, and we welcome Leanne for her regular segment.
Good morning. It's nice to be here. We were just talking about how long I've been doing this, and I need to get back to you on that. That would be a great tidbit of trivia to know.
We were both much younger.
Yes. Yeah. And now I'm much more wise, too. I want to start with an immediate opening on the Story County Board of Adjustment. We have a position open that will end December 31st, 2023. It's an opportunity, if you're interested in serving on the Board of Adjustment, to get in and get your feet wet. The application is on our website at www.storycountyiowa/appointment-app. We need applications by November 6th of 2019, so you have a couple months to consider whether or not you want to apply. You can get more information about the Story County Board of Adjustment online as well. Later on, when I get done, I'll tell you where to send those applications. Absentee voting begins in the Story County Auditor's Office today for the 2019 special bond referendum election for the City of Ames. That election is actually held on September 10th of this year. So all eligible voters beginning today that reside within the City of Ames may vote at the Story County Auditor's Office. Their normal office hours are 8 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you don't know where the auditor's office is, it's in Nevada at the Story County Administration Building at 906 Street. It's on the second floor. Do keep in mind, if you're interested in voting on Monday, September 2nd, the county buildings will be closed for the federal Labor Day holiday. But some important dates to remember, Wednesday, August 14th, again today is first day to vote in person in the auditor's office. Friday, August 30th, voter pre-registration deadline. And that same day, the deadline to request a mailed absentee ballot occurs. Monday, September 2nd, all county offices are closed, so you cannot vote in person that day. Monday, September 9th is the last day to vote absentee in person. Mailed ballots must be postmarked no later than that day to be considered. And then the election is on Tuesday, September 10th, and polls open 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. I will be my next report, probably reporting on the city and county or city and school elections that are upcoming this fall. But if you want some additional information about just general elections and how to register to vote, again, you can visit our county website or contact the county auditor's office at 515-382-7210. We have another board and commission that is looking for someone. This time it's the Story County Commission of Veterans Affairs. They have one opening for a commissioner. And again, later on, I'll give you some more information. But there's a Freedom Flight news. If you want to, if you have any World War II, Korea, or Vietnam veteran that would like to go to Washington, D.C. for a Freedom Flight and has not yet been on a Freedom Flight, there is a flight this fall and next spring. You can contact Story County Veterans Affairs at 126 South Kellogg, Suite 001, and bring your DD-214 military discharge, and you can get signed up. I think the opportunities for the Freedom Flights are starting to become a little bit less than have been in the past, so if you want know someone or want to take an opportunity to do that, sign up now. Story County Supermarket Veterans Benefits is coming up on Friday, November 15th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. It occurs at the Plex, which is located at 5501 George Washington Carver Avenue in Ames. That day is wonderful. There's opportunities for donuts and coffee first thing in the morning, haircuts all day, meetings and opportunity to meet with representatives from the Department of the Veterans Affairs for Iowa. Story County Veterans Affairs, I'll be there, I believe, for Home Base Iowa, Iowa Transition Assistance Advisor, the VA Vet Center. It goes on and on. All information and services are available, and you can contact Brett McLean at 515-956-2626. The Central Iowa Community Services, CICS, is seeking volunteers to join the Citizen Children's Advisory Committee. With the passage of House File 690, the mental health and disability service regions in the state of Iowa have been given the responsibility of developing and administering the children's behavioral health system on behalf of those children with a serious emotional disturbance diagnosis. The purpose of this new advisory committee is to influence and to develop a system of care for children in the CICS region. The committee will initially meet monthly with the intent to move to quarterly meetings. CICS is inviting individuals from the following categories to submit names for consideration: parents or actively involved relatives, a member from the education system, an early childhood advocate, child welfare advocate, provider of children's services, juvenile court, pediatrician, child care provider, and local law enforcement. The goal is to balance membership among the 11 CICS counties and fill those roles. If you want to become part of this very important emerging organization, you can go to www.cicsmhds.org. That's cicsmhds.org, and then /about/resources. And you can also pick up a printed application at the local CICS office, which, again, is at 126 South Kellogg, Suite 001, and contact Community Services with any questions at 515-663-2930. I've said this a couple times, and we're nearing it. This is probably going to be the last save the date I say for the Story County Mental Health Expo coming up on September 16th at the Iowa State Memorial Union Great Hall in Ames. The event features keynote speaker Jake Sullivan, who played basketball at Iowa State from 2000 to 2004. A reminder that the Treasurer's Office opens at 9:30 a.m. each second Tuesday of the month for staff development. So that would have been yesterday. So the next one will be September 10th. So write in your calendar if you need to do business at the Treasurer's Office. And it's a Tuesday. If it's the second Tuesday, it won't open until 9:30. I'm really excited to announce that people will be able to finally see the remodeling that occurred at the Story County Animal Shelter. We're nearing completion, and the open house and fundraiser will be on Friday, September 27th, from 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. There'll be a silent auction, prizes, drawings, food. And if you have an animal that came from the Story County Animal Shelter, and they're vaccinated, current on all the shots, bring them for a visit. I have a 14-year-old collie we rescued about 14 years ago that we really hope we can get Sadie there to visit the animal shelter. And then lastly, there are a lot of additional openings for boards and commissions in Story County. You can go to the website, as I said before, which is www.storycountyiowa.gov/appointment-app, and find out all the additional information. But I've already mentioned Veterans Affairs. The Analysis of Social Services Evaluation Team, which is known as ACET, has three openings. The Board of Adjustment has another opening, in addition to the immediate vacancy I noted. The Planning and Zoning Commission has an opening. And for both the Board of Adjustment and Planning and Zoning Commission, Iowa law does require a majority of members to reside in unincorporated rural areas, so that might be part of the application process. But completed applications may be mailed or emailed to Alyssa Wignall with Story County Administration at 900 6th Street, Nevada, Iowa, 50201. Send any questions you have to Alyssa at awignall@storycountyiowa.gov. Or give her a phone call at 515-382-7209. These applications are due by 5 p.m. on Monday, October 7th. So we have the one later in November for the Board of Adjustment. That's just a new opening, but then we have all these. Then last, as I say every month, if you're on social media, don't miss out on all the Story County happenings. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Story County Iowa. Instagram is story_county85. And then last, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Story County, Iowa. And feel free to contact me at lharder@storycountyiowa.gov My phone number is 515-382-7247. And that's it, Paul.
Well, Leanne, that's a lot. And I just discovered and reminded myself I'm eligible for the Freedom Flight.
Awesome.
Yeah, I actually am in that category, so I might go this time. I just thought, well, in previous flights, I thought all the World War II vets need to go and the Korean War vets. Now I'm Vietnam era, so it might be my turn.
Well, I'm going to thank you for your service and encourage you to call Brett McLean at 515-956-2626.
I will. And I'm just overwhelmed by all the activity, all that's going on, all the opportunities to serve. And I can hardly wait till I see you next month, Leanne.
September.
Isn't that fall?
Don't want to talk about it.
Yeah,
summer
the days
has gone
are
way
getting
too
short.
Fast.
We'll talk about it when it comes up. Thanks,
yes.
Leanne Harder from
Thank
Story
you.
County, for giving us a rundown on all the great things happening and all the opportunities to serve in Story County. And now we're going to have a little traveling music.
Awesome.
You just tuned in. This is KHOI Community Radio, and we just heard from Leanne Harder. The rest of our program will deal with community involvement in a variety of ways.
And our first guests today are here to tell us about an unusual summer activity here in Ames, the Community Academy. And we're welcoming Mike Todd, and we have Colin Reichert and Elizabeth Burris also today. Welcome to KHOI. And, Mike, you might tell us, what is the Community Academy? We got to start from ground zero.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having us. Yeah, this is the Community Academy is, you know, an organization, an educational nonprofit, 501c3, that's geared towards trying to develop different kinds of educational experiences for students. Yeah, that are connected with nature, community.
This is high school level students?
No, this is preschool through 12th grade.
Oh,
so,
really?
So,
wow.
Yeah, this is a wide range of kids, and we really feel strongly that we want students, you know, as part of their educational experiences, to be involved with the community and through those experiences and through authentic, you know, engagement in the community through working on projects or problems or, you know, and you know, collaborating with organizations and folks that they can get a lot out of those experiences. And you know, I think our goals are to make that part of their education. That throughout their entire time, they're exploring the community, they're making connections with people in the community. Really, really, I think throughout their educational experiences, rooting themselves in the community, and they you know, increasing their network of people that they know and their idea of what even community means.
And this is all face on. They're working directly with people and community organizations. So
yeah,
it's outside the realm of social media and real life experience.
That's right. That's right. And I think you can include social media on that aspect, right? The, you know, promoting what we are doing or whatever, you know, trying to educate people about issues. I think they can use that aspect of it, but it definitely isn't the root. The root is the community.
Well, in the words of the old song, how long has this been going on?
Well, it's kind of weird. It's you know, probably about 3 years, I'd say. Almost three and a half as far as when the very first conversation started with a group of parents and then, you know, slowly developed into me and Colin, and then, you know, over time, other people, you know, his involvement. And we've been incorporated as a 501c3 about 2 years.
Okay.
So it's been a journey. And, we've offered programming the last two summers. We call them summer experiences. So trying to give students, parents, community members, and even staff, you know, some glimpse into what school could possibly be and what education could be for students, and trying to just do things very differently and engage in the community in a different way. And this summer we actually engage in some major projects. It's definitely we're taking some steps.
Well, let's bring Colin in here. Colin, what has your involvement been with this program?
I'm there like Mike as a teacher, but we're also on the board, and so we take care of board duties and fundraising and making the connections initially with community members to get this rolling. Mike has by far been the spearhead of all this, but I'm tagging along and trying to keep up as much as I can.
It's nice to have help, isn't it?
He's more than
you don't
help.
Want to do this all alone.
An integral part, yeah.
Well, now, how many students were involved this summer?
We had close to 60. I think it was 55 was our final.
And the age range is pretty large, right?
It is a wide range. And part of our model is that we would have interaction there with, siblings. But beyond that, just people of different ages. So there's an opportunity for real mentorships and interaction between different age groups.
So some of the older young people can be mentors to the younger ones coming up. And that's great. And Elizabeth, tell us about your involvement.
I was one of the students there both years, and I definitely had the opportunity to mentor towards the younger kids since I'm almost 16, and so I was one of the older kids.
Yes. Now, what projects specifically were you involved with in terms of community service?
We really focused on Brookside this year, and working on making a new trail and restoring a little bit of the land and planting different things in different areas. And so I helped with mostly restoring some of the land that had previously been kind of destroyed a little bit by some of the city's work.
Well, I know there's been a lot of need for improvements at Brookside. There's been some damage. And
right.
So how many students were involved working out at Brookside? Were you a part of a group there that worked there all summer?
Yeah, all of the students worked there, even the really, really little kids.
So everybody's in the same place doing the same work as one big team.
Yeah.
And Brookside was the theme, right?
Yep.
Well, now tell me, Mike, how did the students get chosen or volunteer? How do you do intake, or do you have to limit the program? Or
yeah, we definitely have to limit the program. Just logistically, we're learning so much as an organization, and tasks that we don't really. You know, I'm not a marketer. I'm not a insurance person. I'm not a business person. So I don't know all these things. So as a nonprofit, we're running this nonprofit. Right, we're trying to figure all these things out along the way, along with logistically trying to collaborate with organizations and collaborators and then make this happen. So, you know, we are our goal is to get as diverse of a group of students as we can from all aspects of life, right? So we actually only opened up a percentage of our registration, about 50% of our registration. It was open to anybody could register. So anybody who thinks, I want a different educational experience, I want to try something different, I think it could work for me, you know, they're welcome to come in. But then we reserved and we stopped registration when we were about 50% of what we wanted to register. And we said, you know, not everybody in that diverse scope of life is going to be able to register, know about it, or whatever in that time frame. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to partner with organizations like the school district and Boys and Girls Club and a bunch of organizations that Colin worked with. Actually, Colin worked much more closely with this committee. Was this committee that went out and tried to target students who might benefit from an experience like this. And so we wanted to make sure we got the word out to those people as well. You know, our you know, there's a registration fee for this. You know, obviously there's a lot of things like insurance and all kinds of stuff, the bus and everything else that, you know, costs money.
It's always a logistical problem.
Yeah, it'd be just more logistics than we could even imagine. So so anyway, we have a sliding scale to try to make it so that's possible. And so we just charge less. It's based on family size and family income. And then Colin, with this committee, ran a scholarship process where, you know, they could go out and if we were targeting kids, we could charge them nothing for this three-week, all-day experience that went out and changed things in the community.
Well, you know, that's really great because, number one, you've got a variety of age groups. And number two, there's the opportunity for different students to benefit in different ways. And they can actually make referrals of students that they think would benefit from this program. And Colin, tell us about some things that you want to remember from this program and your personal experience. Something stands out.
One of the features of the way we do this is we have public exhibitions. And for me, those are always the ones that stand out the most. So during a public exhibition, whatever the students have been working on is displayed to the public, and the public is often invited to give feedback. So early on, in the first week, we had a public exhibition with students just initial ideas for the changes that they wanted to make in the park. Then anyone in the public could go to the Ames Public Library and see their work and give feedback on their ideas. And we also purposely invited experts that would know a lot about the ecology of the area and the history of the area and so forth.
Say, I'm curious. What do you, Colin, what do you teach? And Mike, what do you teach? I think, obviously, not business, right?
No. Yeah.
No. So
we're both science teachers. Mike has taught biology and physics primarily, and I teach earth and space science and starting to get into environmental science and possibly anthropology.
Well, now, I think that we need to talk to Elizabeth again. Tell us about anything special or funny or weird that happened this summer. There's got to be some anecdotes from your experience at Brookside. Did someone fall in the creek or anything like that?
Definitely. multiple people fell in the creek several times. we had a lot of really fun experiences. And I think the best part was just having, you know, these hands-on experiences and getting to learn while, you know, we're outside and doing things with the community. I know that a lot of people have struggled some with the way the education system is set up now. And so this really seems like a great opportunity for myself as well as others to have an opportunity to learn in a different manner that was maybe more helpful to them than what the traditional school system is working with. And so I think it really drew out a lot of kids, I could tell. And so we had a lot of fun and funny experiences while also learning and having fun, which I think stood out to me the most.
You know, I think you pressed the right button in my book because we're talking about students who may not have been acquainted with each other before this program. And so by the end of this program, you got new friends, right?
Yeah,
people
absolutely.
You never knew before. Now, there was an opportunity for you to have a mentoring relationship. Is that right?
Yeah. Definitely a scary process. Mm-hmm. When we did one of the community exhibitions. I was paired with a younger student, and I was really worried because I was like, I don't know how to, you know, lead this younger student. I don't know, you know, how much she knows and what she wants to do and what I want to do. And it was a delicate balance of trying to figure out, you know, how I'm going to help her and how she can really have a lot of involvement in the project. And I was just really shocked because, you know, she was doing great and was really excited about the whole thing. And I definitely learned a lot about how to, you know, mentor to younger students. And also, while they're learning from me, I'm learning from them.
So you had to get out of your comfort zone and do something that, first of all, was kind of scary, but then you fit into it and functioned as a mentor. That's growth for you, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
And Mike, that's what you're here for, right? Growth.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think growth in multiple contexts too. I think you can do community service in these projects in a kind of way that the students are basically, you know, the workers, and they're just doing whatever we tell them to do, right? And I don't think there's a lot of growth in the students and the staff and the community when that necessarily happens. I think it's great, right, for the community. And I think there are some things that you can learn from that, but I don't think that's necessarily what we're going for. And so when we approached Brookside Park the first day, it's not like we told students, okay, kids, here's a checklist of work things that we're going to do, so get to work and we'll have lunch, and, you know,
yeah, right.
Maybe give you a water break. I don't know. No, it was about, you know, we let's get to know Brookside Park. Let's learn about our place-based education. Let's deep learning in our place. And so we brought in all these experts, right? And we brought in, you know, Tyler Herms from the Young Birders Association, and we brought in Keith Abraham from the director of Parks and Rec that was teaching us about Brookside and what had happened there. Marlene and Bruce Ayersman were coming in and talking about the ecology and, you know, their experiences at Brookside Park when living next to it over the years. Lori Biederman from the Friends of Brookside Park was coming and giving us a sense of what that group has as an interest there and positive things and negative things that have been happening. And so we started to formulate, you know, the students an idea of what are the needs of this place? What is the community saying the needs are? We're not going there saying, we know what the needs are. We're going to do it no matter what. You know, it was formulated through these experiences of learning about our place and these experts and these people who live there and their own experiences. And then once we have that idea of the needs, then we start formulating, hey, what could we do in this amount of time that we have? And so then, you know, you start to look at possible project ideas. The students were proposing these in small groups, coming up with initial plans. Well, then we bring Keith Abraham, the director of Parks and Rec, back in for the city of Ames, and he looked something over, and he sat with every single group. Mm-hmm. It was amazing, and gave them feedback on, ooh, from his perspective and his experience, you know, that's going to be difficult, or that's great, or you know, somewhere in between. And so then these ideas are evolving. And then so as they say, okay, this is going to be a possible project idea, well, I don't, you know, they want some signs. We don't know how to design signs. So if we approach the project as a lot of people do, right, I'm just going to make whatever kind of sign I want and make it look how I want, and we're going to call that good. Well, we might have some unintended consequences. And, you know, the throughout learning about the history of Brookside Park, the students did, they learned that there were many unintended consequences of many of the actions at Brookside Park over the years. And so we were trying to avoid that. So let's bring in lots of perspective in our community. Let's bring in lots of expertise to help us understand what we might be able to do. And that's maybe a better way to approach doing things in our community so that we benefit as many people in our community as possible and the ecosystem. And so through that process, you know, the students were bringing in experts in trail building. That was one of the things that was brought up. And initially, you know, we had this idea that in Keith that there was a trail that was right next to the, you know, we're talking about the off paved trail, so the non paved trails that was running next to Squaw Creek that was eroding in because of the river. And the initial idea was, hey, let's make a new trail through the wooded area. And so that was what we were kind of running with, but we were bringing in an ecologist and the Friends of Brookside Park. And Lori Biederman said, well, you know, that's gonna have some unintended consequences. You're making more edge. You're gonna change the forest and the critters that need more of a, you know, habitat that's away from the edge. You're going to negatively impact them. And we talked to the trail builder, a person from Pete England from Heritage Trails, you know, an expert trail builder came in and talked to the kids and said, trails are scars on the land. You have to be very thoughtful about where you put those things. And so in hearing all this, we basically had to bring Keith back in and say, you know, the kids are doing this. This may not be the best thing for Brookside and the ecology, right? And so maybe we should come up with another aspect, you know, another part of this. And Lori Biederman had said, well, this other area, you could put something in a nice trail and it would be fine because it's already disturbed. It's just different than this big chunk of undisturbed, not undisturbed, but a larger tract of place that didn't have any of these unpaved trails. And so, you know, when we were talking with Keith that day, I remember him saying, oh, Lori Biederman said it was fine? Friends of Brookside Park, well, then great, we'll do that. And it was just an amazing sort of, you know, when you bring all these stakeholders together and students are integral in that process, that nothing was being decided for them. They were in the process of an authentic, community-based solution project process. And I think there was growth from all aspects, from everybody. And it was, I mean, this is how you get students that as they approach adulthood are connected to the community, and as they get into positions of, you know, leadership in our community, they maybe take a different approach to doing things in our community instead of, I'm just going to do whatever I want to do.
Mike Todd, I wish our listeners could see how animated Mike is and how sold on this program he is. And, you know, I really liked that it wasn't just a work project, but it really instructed the students on how that fits into the big picture, how that impacts the community, and hopefully it develops a lifetime habit of being a community server and someone integrated into the community. I just think it's fantastic, this whole program, this academy. And we've been enjoying our conversation with Colin Reichert, Elizabeth Burris, and Mike Todd. And I hope the program goes well next year as it has this year. Thanks a lot, folks.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've heard from participants in last summer's Community Academy, a new program designed to involve students directly in making a difference in their community. Of course, one of the ways that students can make a difference in their community is through their involvement in politics. And there are many, many opportunities for that in Iowa, including the soapbox at the State Fair, which political reporters from KHOI covered thoroughly. Once again, we have our guest political reporter, Lily Boske, to thank for recording their speeches. And while she was there, she also recorded the Gun Sense Forum, which was sponsored by Every Town for Gun Safety, Moms Demand Action, and Students Demand Action. It is appropriate to include this in our program about student action because the speakers emphasized how important student action on this issue has been. Many students here in Central Iowa joined thousands of others across the country in the March for Our Lives strikes. In addition to the introduction, we'll hear from the first of the 16 presidential candidates who spoke at the Gun Sense Forum. This was Tim Ryan. If you listened last week, you heard his remarks about agriculture, along with my erroneous announcement that he had dropped out of the presidential race. The confusion came because he was temporarily withdrawing from scheduled events to go home to Ohio in the wake of the shooting at Dayton. You'll hear from him about that.
Welcome all of the Moms Demand Action volunteers who have come from near and far to be here today. I also want to thank the Students Demand Action volunteers. These students are raising their voices and empowering their peers to get engaged in advocacy. And I want to extend a warm, warm Iowa welcome to the survivors of gun violence who are joining us today. As always, we are in awe of your passion and your strength and the ways that you have channeled your grief into action to create a country where no American lives in fear of gun violence. Here in Iowa, we see our fair share of presidential candidates. But today, we're going to see something I've never seen before. Today, nearly every candidate for the President of the United States will stand before you and affirm their commitment to solving the gun violence crisis in America.
And each of them will be responding to questions from people who have been working on gun violence for a long time. And the next speaker will introduce herself, and you'll then hear from Tim Ryan.
Deandra Dykus, an Indiana Moms Demand Action volunteer and gun violence survivor.
Again, my name is Deandra Dykus. And 5 years ago, my son DeAndre was attending a birthday party in Indianapolis when he was hit by a stray bullet in the back of his head. His smile still lights up a room, but Dre, as we call him, is now a quadriplegic and can no longer talk. Although in my heart, Dre's silence is so very loud, it is now up to me as his mother to be his voice, which is why I'm so grateful to be here today. 1 week ago, our first candidate's home state was struck by tragedy when a gunman in Dayton opened fire on a crowd of people at a night enjoying a night, killing 9 and wounding dozens more. Since then, he's been helping to lead the call to demand that his Senate finally act to end gun violence. He's a leader who is committed to doing whatever it takes to ensure that more families don't ever have to experience the pain that many of us know all too well. Please welcome to the stage Congressman Tim Ryan. All right, I have a question I'd like to ask, and then I'll pass it over to John to facilitate the conversation with the audience. My first question is the same that I'll be asking to all the candidates here today. If elected president of the United States, how will you prioritize gun safety in your administration?
You know, obviously, there's going to be legislative actions that we'll talk about. I think that the most important thing the next president can do is to keep this issue front and center for the American people. By using the power of the presidency, by using the bully pulpit, by showing up in communities when there's not necessarily a mass shooting, and really bringing the awareness to the people every single day that this is an issue that we need to continue to work on. And I will just tell you the experience over the past week, as you mentioned, in Dayton, we went to the vigil with Mayor Nan Whaley, who is doing an absolutely phenomenal job in holding that community together. The number of people that I met, and I think this is when we talk about presidential leadership and why is this different? I think a couple reasons. One is we all went to bed heartbroken about El Paso, and then the first alert we got when we woke up was about Dayton. And that back-to-back scenario, I think, moved people in a way. And when I was in Dayton, we went to the vigil, and then we stayed after for a couple hours. I kept meeting people. I met a guy who was in Charlottesville for the race issue riot down there, who watched someone die. Wow. And then he was in Dayton, and it was there, the entertainment district. He wasn't there for the event, but he lives in Dayton. A friend of ours is a reporter, and she watched in Dayton, and she watched someone bleed out. And she also experienced a shooting at Florida State a few years back when she was a student there. And we were in Louisville a couple days ago, presidential campaign. It all blends together here. What day is it? Where am I? No. And I met a woman who was in New York Times Square for that video that we all saw when the motorcycle backfired. Mm-hmm. And she was showing me she ran as she was there. The motorcycle backfired. And, you know, she was all beat up and got trampled on and same kind of thing. She said she has not slept one night since that happened in New York Times Square. And it just is so pervasive now. It's like you have how many people died and how many people were injured, and then you have all the people around that scenario that are as traumatized as anyone else. And so as president, I want to make sure that we know the scope of this and really use the position to try to start healing this country, which has got to be the number one responsibility for the next president. How do we heal? Because we're broken, and we got to admit that.
But you're not gonna knock us down, we'll get back up again. You may have hurt us, but I promise we'll be stronger, and we're not gonna let you in. We're putting
up a fight. You may have brought the dark, but together we will shine the light. And whoa, we will be something special. Whoa, we're gonna shine. We're gonna stand tall. Gonna raise up our voices so we'll never ever fall. We're done with all your little games. We're tired of hearing that we're too young to ever make a change. 'Cause you're not gonna knock us down. We'll get back up again. You may have hurt us, but I promise we'll be stronger. And we're not gonna let you in. We're putting up a fight. You may have brought the dark, but together we will shine the light. Whoa,
by those who will not listen. There are so many things you can do to get involved. Reach out to your congressman. Mail, call, and tweet.
The smallest of words can make the biggest difference.
Be the voice for those who don't have one.
Together, we have the power to change the world around us.
You're not gonna knock us down. We'll get back up again. We'll be stronger and we're not gonna let you in. We're putting up a fight. You may have brought the dark. Together we will shine a light. You're not gonna knock us down. We'll get back up again. You may have hurt us, but I promise we'll be stronger and we're not gonna let you in. We're putting up a fight. You may have brought the dark. Together we will shine a light.
KHOI Community Radio, focusing on the many ways we can help our children grow up safely and be prepared for the challenges of the 21st century. You just heard selections from the beginning of the Des Moines Gun Sense panel. Tomorrow on Heart of Iowa, we'll play a longer selection from some of the presidential candidates who addressed the issue, along with the questioners from who were in many cases gun violence survivors, and I have listened to this as I prepared it, and it is an extremely moving experience. So I recommend the Heart of Iowa program highly. But before we close out our show today, we are happy to be able to bring you an update on one of our own area schools, Collins Maxwell. Their new superintendent, Corey Lunn, who also serves as middle school and high school principal, brings unique experience and insight to the job. Welcome, Corey.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How are you, Corey? This is Paul Wearson. I'm Susan's co-host. I read in the Tri-County Times that you were superintendent in several much larger schools, Corey. How did you get there, and how did you get here?
Yeah, well, it's a long path when you turn around and look at it. I grew up in a small town on the Minnesota-Iowa border, Jackson, Minnesota, just north of Spirit Lake. My first superintendent job was in a smaller district, and then I worked in two larger school districts. After doing that for a number of years, there were some things I missed, especially when you think of the purpose that got you in education in the first place, and that was working more closely with kids and teachers and parents in a larger district. You have way less time to do those things. There was an opportunity here to do that, and I thought well, if I was going to do this, I wanted to try it out. It was a perfect opportunity to do it. And just re-energized myself of all the things I wanted to do and the reason I went to this field in the first place.
Well, now you're functioning in a unique job situation. You're superintendent, but you're also principal. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, well, you know, what I tell people is if someone doesn't like what the principal's doing, they can just turn around and call the superintendent.
Right. You can keep it in-house.
But, yeah, that's a pretty unusual situation. There are a number of districts in Iowa and even Minnesota that do that because of their size. And that just comes about with size and budget and those kind of things. You know, last year I served as the high school middle school principal, and Superintendent Maxey was part-time superintendent, and the plan was always to merge those things. And you know, I guess the thing that helps me is I have been a superintendent and served that role. So far, it's been a pretty smooth transition.
What attracted you to the opening at Collins Maxwell?
Well, I think number one is location. You know, I live in the Des Moines Metro. My wife works downtown Des Moines. Number two is opportunity. Like I said, I was really looking to do something different. And at that time, it was a one-year thing. You could try it out and decide if that was really wanted, what I wanted to do or not. And like I said, it's kind of returned to my roots. Grew up in a small community. First job as a superintendent with a small community. And I'll tell you, there are so many benefits of a small district. We get to know our kids very well. The kids don't get lost in the cracks. We know them. We have interventions for them. We have strong relationships with our kids. And, you know, in response, our staff is very caring and responsive to the needs of students.
Well, actually, Collins Maxwell would be called a 1A school. Is that right, Corey?
Correct, yeah.
And so being that category, what's the enrollment size for your school?
We're right around 500, pre-K through 12.
And then how many attendance centers do you maintain?
We have an elementary building in Collins, and then we have the high school, middle school district office here in Maxwell.
So, and you might blow your own horn a little bit. I think you've had a real success athletically recently, right?
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago we went through an interesting transition. A number of years we were with Baxter for athletics, and we separated out. And our first year on our own, we were state champs, as you mentioned, the girls softball 1A, and we followed that up this year, so two-time champ, and we're just excited for next year. And in fact, our girls' sports have always been really, really strong the last couple of years, and our boys are improving as well, so that's definitely a bright spot here, along with many, many other things that I already mentioned.
And I believe you play eight-man football, right?
Yeah, that was new for us too, but that's correct.
I played high school football. As a matter of fact, my first varsity football game, I was called upon to play as a freshman, and you don't know how silly that is when you realize I'm not a great athlete, but it was down at the field on Maxwell, and the coach screamed my name because someone had made a mistake and put me out on the field, and that little field down in Maxwell has a special place in my heart. It was the first moment I played varsity football, so when Roland Story used to play Collins Maxwell Baxter, when I went down to the games, I'd always teared up right before I went to the concession stand.
But yeah, it's a pretty cool atmosphere.
Yeah.
Like I said, very intimate. People are sitting around the sidelines in the chairs and pickup heads and talking. It's really a social event. And, you know, the boys won four out of the last five games this year, again, after only a second year. So, expect a lot of improvement next year as well.
Well, the main thing is that these schools survive. You know, yeah. I'm thinking of your school district, and then I'm thinking of Colonesco, very similar. They have the eight-man football. They're in almost an identical situation as you are, and they're not far from you geographically. And I suppose you do interscholastic sports with them too, don't you?
Correct. You know, it's interesting. If you look at the number of districts by class size, I think I remember seeing a statistic once that actually the 1A schools have the most number of school districts. But, of course, by number, they're way behind. But I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, I do like the intimacy. I do some volunteer work at Colonesco, and I'm sure the same is true at Collins Maxwell. The intimacy, the fact that all the kids and well, the teachers seem to have such an intimate relationship with the students. That really impresses me, and I think that...
We know the kids really well. We know when they're not here. We know what they need. And in a bigger district, I mean, someone could walk through the hall as a new student, and you wouldn't even know if they're a student or not.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
When you got, you know, 1,800 kids in your school building.
Now, you're the Spartans, is that right?
Correct.
And they had to, well, they used to be CMB, and they were the Raiders when we played them in football. And then those schools separated, and they had to come up with the logo, everything, right? The mascot? Were you there when that process occurred?
No, I wasn't. But, I mean, that was all arranged by kids, I believe.
The kids made the choices, as I remember.
Yeah, there's a number of proposals, and the kids got the votes, and which is the right way to do it. And we actually have a collection here of all the former mascots and names, and it, you know, goes back to the Rockets at one point. So I think there's been four or five different changes in the last many years.
Well, I think that that's really what an Iowa school district traditionally has been. It sounds like my school, Story City, back in the 50s when I went through high school. And that remarkable intimacy and the fact that it's a challenge, I'm sure, to keep all the extracurricular activities up in a school that's smaller. How many students do you anticipate graduating each year now?
You know, it ranges from 30 to 40, but, you know, I thought that too, but I have to tell you, I was amazed and impressed with the number of electives that kids had here. You know, we have a relationship with DMAC and Hunziker Center in Ames, so our kids can take college level and career preparation courses off campus. We have online opportunities. We have advanced placement courses online. I mean, as much as that technology sometimes is difficult for kids, it's been a huge advantage for opportunities. I was very impressed with the number of electives and options the kids had here for a school this size.
You know, that's the marvelous thing about the digital age.
Yeah.
There are a lot of high school students up where I come from, Roland Story, who actually graduate with quite a bit of college credit accumulated. And that's possible at your school, too. That's not dependent on size, is it, Corey?
Yeah, that's a good deal for our families and students because, you know, we pay for that course and they get those college credits and they can go to college with some things already under their belt.
Well, Corey, I'm sorry we've run out of time. It's been fun to talk to you. And best of luck to you in the coming school year. And congratulations on two softball championships for Collins Maxwell.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Corey Lynn, principals. Superintendent Collins Maxwell Schools, thank you very much.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Mike Todd, Colin Reichert, Elizabeth Burris,
Deandra Dykus,
Tim Ryan, and Corey Lunn.
Well, you can listen to today's Local Talk show and many of our past Local Talk shows right here online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Paul Hertz. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Shine, written and performed by students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show, and if you'd like to join the team as a reporter, please contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Now, that's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership. Just look for the yellow Donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.